Hello and welcome to Deeply Disturbing Things.
I'm Macy.
And I'm Naomi.
And we're two professional counselors that like to talk about deeply disturbing things.
And this is our podcast.
Welcome.
Dive in.
Woo. So, cool. Podbean had some updates. Are you in yet as a host?
Yeah, I can see like a live chat thing. Super cool.
Super cool.
We had a spider incident just about 5 minutes ago. We're sitting here getting ready, and then Macy points behind me and goes, "Spider!
Spider! Spider!"
So I had to leap in one move out of my chair, barrel roll across the bed to safety. Did you like my move?
Yeah, you actually did barrel roll into the side even.
Yeah, it was a one move. It was like a spring out of my chair, land on the bed, mid barrel roll to safety.
And then I was blocking your exit, which I could tell bothered you, and you needed to get past me.
Could you move so I can get all the way out of the room? So luckily, Asher was here, and he bravely got the spider.
You survived.
I was so brave.
You did so good.
Well, cheers. We're having some black cherry cider.
It's actually scrumdiddlyumptious.
Yummy. Gluten-free, no sugar.
It is good.
Yummy. And we're going to go on our first roller skate of the year tomorrow.
Woo!
Very exciting.
I need to move. I put on a pair of pants today, and I was like, I can't. If I sit in these, I'm going to break the button on it. And it is really sad. Really sad.
You can do like the trick with the rubber band, you know, where you create an expansion panel.
Oh, like in the pant?
Like you wrap a rubber band around the button and then put it through the buttonhole and then back around the button again. And it gives you an extra few inches.
Yeah, I just need to exercise.
You just don't want to go there.
No, I don't want to accept it. The pants are in the drawer. They'll stay there for a little bit. I'm
excited. I have not washed my roller derby gear in.
Oh, me neither.
Probably 6 years. So
yeah, I think there's a few tournaments still on mine.
Maybe I'll do a spring wash for 2020, fresh start.
Ooh, yeah.
I was always worried about washing my mojo off.
Mm-hmm. But we're not like competing, so.
And yeah, I don't need skate around the street mojo.
Odds are I'll biff it and fall in front of people anyways.
I think my mojo is built in at this point. I don't need to wear it.
Wear your
my mojo's on the inside.
Stinky, yeah, you're stinky and sweaty on the inside.
This is good, herb cider.
Herb. So I have a check-in.
What's your check-in?
Do you remember? You probably do. Your previous topic episode about the young student who was found in the mat, the wrestling mat?
Yes.
Did you see the update?
No. What's the update?
Well, there's like a new, sheriff in town, and he is reopening the case. Because it was ruled as an accident prior. So they're reopening it and they're actually investigating and talking to the family members.
Well, hallelujah.
Right? Hopefully some justice, at least to fully do the job.
Yeah. Kendrick Johnson.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I just didn't feel like that case was resolved to the satisfaction of the family and to many others, including myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's good that they're taking another look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
A lot of, things that didn't get looked into thoroughly at the time. We went to a drag show last weekend.
We did.
Things are starting to open up here in Spokane. And so we, cautiously stepped out.
We wore masks and it was very well spaced out. I was actually very impressed. That was the Globe downtown. Like they handled things very well. Somebody came in without a mask on and they got on that person so fast. Mask, 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 get out, get out.
Mm-hmm. And the queens were not right there performing. They had them, upstairs or
in I don't know. They were in some secret room.
Yeah. So they had their performance playing on all the screens. Mm-hmm. So that was safe that way. So we wouldn't get, breathed on, I guess.
Yeah, probably so we don't breathe on them.
Right. So no mutual breath sharing.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was fun.
That was fun. It was nice just to do something. Like, you dressed up. I didn't, but that's okay.
Well, I dressed up, but as I was trying to dress up, I realized that in a year of not really buying full outfits, all I had was like 40 sweaters.
I'm wearing one of mine
right
now.
No bottoms, no shoes. So I had to like put something together. I wore snow boots, but
you know, I pulled
the look together.
Yeah, I don't think anyone had a high expectations of us. Yeah, no, that was fun. I enjoyed it. Any other check-ins for you?
Let me consult my notes. Let's see. I don't think I do. Oh, I do. Happy 1 year anniversary of the day the WHO announced the pandemic.
Oh,
that's today, March 11th, 2020. It occurred.
Wow.
It's been exactly 1 year since that got announced.
It was so, I was thinking about that this week. Just thinking back to when this was all happening, and I remember a phone call with the owner of the agency at the time, and I had said, they were talking about, you know, I think we're over, like, basically overreacting. And I said, all I know is we can't treat this like a common cold. Like, this isn't the same, and we need to take precautions. And that was so minimized at the time, and how, like, horrible to consider staff staying home for a week. And it's just amazing how far that has gone since then.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I feel like so much of my life just halted at that time. And now I feel like I'm picking back up where we left off. Mm-hmm. Like Paul and I have resumed our dance lessons again. We were doing that right when that started. I'm starting to, you know, expand my yoga offerings to get back to bringing that more into my life. So I feel like it's like, okay, picking back up. It was a weird year.
Yeah. It literally ate a year of our lives.
Yeah. And I mean, there was some good things, definitely. Like there's some blessings in there for me personally, anyway, mm-hmm. with just being able to work from home and that, you know.
I mean, it gave me the steps to end up quitting that job. And then starting my own business.
Yeah. So it wasn't all bad. But I'm one to always find the silver linings. It's part of my perpetual happiness.
I'm not, but that's why we're friends.
I'll help you find those silver linings.
Thank you. You can just sprinkle them around me, and that does make me feel better.
I'll just skip around with silver glitter and just toss it at you.
And I'll just point out the spiders. It's my job. I keep you safe from your blissful ignorance.
So here's how you could improve on that, what happened.
Oh, okay.
You could say, hey, Naomi, come over here. I need to show you something on my laptop. And then I would be far away from the spider. And then you could say, oh, there was a spider there. And I would not have to have done that Jack in the Box.
But I was so excited that it was actually a real spider this time instead of when I lied about the spider that one time. I was excited about the interaction that was going to happen.
Oh, questionable. What makes you excited?
I get to go first today.
Yay.
Yay.
I'm okay with that because my topic doesn't involve math.
Oh, good. Good. And my topic was actually more than I was like really ready to do. But it started with me trying to figure out what I wanted to do for my topic. And I was started down this path of like looking at like PTSD and trauma in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I find very interesting and started to go down that route. And I found this ginormous 20-page article about something similar, but very different. And that's the route I ended up going. And I learned things that I did not know before. And this, I would actually say, like, I am a trauma specialist. I have a lot of specialized training, but like, culturally, this is an area that I wasn't as aware of, and I'm happy I learned more about it.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm hoping you learned something today, too. We'll see.
I love learning.
We'll see. You may know all the
My
all
grandma
the things.
Always told me learn something new every day, and I've really taken that to heart. But she was a science grandma. She wasn't like a cookie grandma.
What?
She was a science grandma.
Not a cookie grandma?
Yeah. There was no cookies, no... She wasn't that kind of grandma. It was, let's go to the beach and collect magnetic sand, grandma.
Oh.
There was no TV, no processed foods, no snacks, no nothing.
My grandma definitely wasn't a cookie grandma, but it was much more of a, are we throwing things? Much more of a, like, let's watch The Voice together. And talk about politics.
No, there was no TV at her house. It was just reading.
To be fair, TV took a long time for my grandma to integrate in.
But I loved reading, but she did not approve of the books I loved to read because it was like detective stories. You know, she wanted me to, if I'm going to read something, it's going to be something useful.
Factual, yeah.
Welcome, Jessie's Clear, to the live show.
I love that you can actually see the whole thing now. This is great. All right, so my topic today is I'm going to actually talk about the growing body of research around mental distress in Africa from the kind of war-torn conflicts that have been existing there for hundreds and hundreds, I think over like 600 years. Mm-hmm. And really the angle that this ended up going wasn't so much about the like the fighters. It's about the civilians and the communities and the impact mm-hmm. of that type of like really complex trauma on the community as a whole. So just to give a little props, this actually came from the Department of Psychiatry at Makerere University in Uganda. So that's where the research came from. So there's a growing body of research that highlights the increasing mental distress in Africa about sexuality, health, disease, climate, politics, culture, religion, ethnicities, race, economies, and many of these stresses and uncertainties have been driven by political persecution, war, and conflict. So what we're going to talk about specifically is how trauma in that conflict, post-conflict setting in Africa has caused significant mental stress, leading to things like PTSD syndromes, anxiety, and depression. And there's actually a few subsets of those that I'm going to see if you know about them. There was a couple I had never known, but they're less Western culturally defined for what types of trauma they are. So in more recent years, many of these psychosocial problems were driven by war conflict.
Where in Africa?
Well, so this is talking about the whole African continent. Okay. So it's kind of summarizing research. We'll reference a couple different places, but really the region as a whole. That have really shaped the African people's attitudes, politics, government policies, and migrations. So trauma, especially war-related mass trauma, is an endemic in Africa that has stretched over 600 years. The 400-plus year history of the transatlantic slave trade was associated with incessant slave raids, which fueled old ethnic rivalries and migratory movements on the continent. These were then followed by 100 years of the wars of foreign colonization of what Europeans felt was their duty to civilize the African, which they had, this is in quotes here, the white man's burden to do that.
I've heard that quote before.
Yeah, which is odd because it's really not relevant in modern day. Like this was a colonial thing, but I agree, I've heard it too. This period was characterized by the three C's, conquer, convert, and colonize. And this foreign imposed kind of religious wars, which begin because of this, for the African souls and the European Christians, it was kind of Catholic versus Protestant at the time, as well as Arab Muslims.
Oh my God, Islam. I just discovered our topics are totally linked.
There's a couple things in here that connect with past topics too that I was like, what?
We need to get that big wall of like yarn connecting.
People are just gonna think that we've really lost our minds at that juncture. They're gonna like at some point raid your house because I don't know. And
because we've discovered the secret of everything.
But that's like when the detectives break into the room and they're like, these are serial killers. Like all these things are connected. I agree. I think it would be good.
We'll accept our fate at that point.
Yes. So this period witnessed some of the harshest and cruelest treatment of Africans by the European colonists and conquerors, with frequent massacres and genocides during that period by European powers. Following that period of European conquest came the wars of independence as Africans fought to liberate themselves. Post-independence, however, African warfare has still continued with insurgencies, border-to-border conflicts, fundamentalism, and political governance and war. So the African people have really not gotten a break from wartime. It has been continuous. This has included the increase of post-traumatic stress disorder, anxieties, depression, psychosis, traumatic brain injury, epilepsies, and other physical injuries, as which can then cause things like substance abuse, epidemics, HIV, cholera, Ebola have all been linked with those increases in PTSD. There have also been reports of unusual or atypical common presentations. So I'm going to read these and you just tell me if you've heard of some of them or not, and we'll dive into what they are here in a little bit. So the first one is dissociative disorders or spirit possessions is how they view those.
Well, the first part.
Dissociative like disorders, yeah.
Western.
Mm-hmm. So spirit possessions, though, is how they view that. Somatization syndrome, so the physical aspect. Pretty sure you know that one. Rape trauma syndrome.
Well, I mean, we don't have the some of these exact terms in our DSM, but
yeah,
we know of them.
Well, and that's what really kind of was a pull when I was like comparing research, because a lot of them really tried to define things and everyone just kind of got in buckets of PTSD. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really describe in detail what the, because each one of these is so different from the other, and the complexities of it are very different. So, okay. And then the next one, mass hysteria.
Ah, does that go back to your dancing plague
topic? Yes. Yeah, that links back to the dancing plague topic. Cult indoctrination syndromes.
We've talked about the cults on there.
I know.
A couple of them.
And controversial ones like nodding syndrome in Uganda.
Like head nodding?
Yes. This is one that I didn't know about. And I'll talk about it here in a little bit, because it was actually present during a specific war time for them. And then no new symptoms of the nodding syndrome existed or were reported after that, which was really interesting.
I think there's interesting stuff around that, where certain ways that trauma shows up physically,
mm-hmm,
may be very isolated to certain either regions or periods of time. Like, have you seen those old videos of the like World War I or World War II people being filmed, like after, like their whole body is just like jittering, shaking, and shaking, and they can't walk, and that's, mm-hmm, not a presentation we see at all now.
No, and that was common, and that's not in the DSM at all.
It's,
yeah, irregular body movements,
right? Yeah, right. Okay. And that was how it showed up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to learn more about what that's about, mm-hmm, why trauma looks different, maybe different periods of time, different
culture and
reasons.
Presentation. And this, so again, I'll give a little more detail, but it was actually in children.
Hmm.
So it was a very interesting, because a lot of like the theories with the dancing plague, for example, was that it was like a social aspect somehow. With this presentation of trauma in the body for children, it would kind of rule out that social influence, mm-hmm, for why it was occurring.
So it was just the head. It wasn't the whole body shaking.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they actually phrased, I guess we'll talk about it now. They
Why wait?
More Western people labeled it as like a form of epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't the same, like when they did neural scans, it wasn't epilepsy in the brain, but epilepsy-like symptoms. However, for the people in Uganda specifically, they felt that it had more to do with like the souls being taken over, a lot to do with maybe like wrongful burials or deaths in the community, that spirit would overtake.
Oh, that's similar to the last episode about the Kakua.
The Kakua, yes. So there's also new and emerging stress threats to the African continent posed by ongoing mass traumatization, including radicalizations, brainwashing, fundamentalist fanatics, religionists, destructive cults, jihadists, suicide bombers, genocidaires, appetitive aggression. This was something I didn't know about.
What's that?
I'll tell you more. Not now.
Okay.
Child soldiers, and finally the problem of population displacement and the reemergence of slavery. All this traumatization continues to be felt in the day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. In the past 30 years, more than 3/4 of African countries have been involved in warfare in one form or another. It's a lot. Millions of Africans have been traumatized, displaced, malnourished, starved, forced to migrate due to war. Most African countries actually don't make guns, yet they trade in small arms worldwide. So they're not actually the ones making it. Many African countries have a huge and unmanageable health problem that's kind of made worse by the militarization. Wars break out every year. The weapons they use become more deadly, fueled by that small arm trade that is often kind of stirred up by other outside entities, other outside countries. Mm. Today's wars, civilian deaths outnumber the deaths of fighting soldiers. In World War I, for example, the ratio of civilian soldier deaths was 1 to 10. Now, today, the ratio is 10 to 1.
What is a civilian soldier?
No, a civilian.
Oh, civilians to soldiers.
Yeah, civilian to. So, yeah. So, World War I, it was 1 civilian death to 10 soldier deaths. And now it is 10 civilian deaths to 1 soldier death.
Thank you for breaking it down.
Thank you for asking questions, because it's not just you. Someone else probably had that question.
Thank you for normalizing.
You're welcome.
My discomfort in asking a question.
I said numbers. I get it.
Yeah, and immediately my mind went blank.
Yeah. In most African wars, civilians are being targeted. Rape of women, using civilians as human shields, child soldiers, genocides, internally displacing people, refugees. Warfare really has moved from the battlefield to more of an urban warfare in Africa. Targeting of civilian infrastructures is also common. They call them soft targets, such as churches, mosques, markets, shopping centers, college campuses. So that's where they can make people feel unsafe, and that's a lot of the acts of African terrorism. Causes today are really difficult to discern. A lot of political government dilemmas. Some are like territorial, some are just more historical. We're not going to dive into all of that. We don't really have time, but there's a lot of history and context between the types of inner fighting. So in today's wars, including those in Africa, with the civilians suffering the most, these are the types of things that come up most frequently. So with physical torture, stuff like beatings, kickings, gunshots, bombs, landmines, cutting, tying, blindfolding, child soldiering, disfigurements, burning, forced labor, sexual abuse, which could include things like rape, public rape, gang rape, sexual slavery, defilements, executions, mass killings, and ethnic killings. Then there's psychological torture, threats, interrogation, mock executions, things that are made to really just kind of elicit the fear response, humiliating people, deprivations, social torture, destruction of property and livestock, fleeing, or even just witnessing other people fleeing.
What's a mock execution?
Well, I think
is that where they like make somebody feel like they're going to execute them, but they really don't. Or is it where they kind of put on a show?
I think it's more like a show.
Like, this could happen to you.
Yeah, I think it's more about the public, because it's all about the psychological fear. So it's the, we're going to, the people are getting restless. They're starting to, push back. Find somebody who's broken a law. We're gonna go and publicly execute him to show them, who has the authority.
But if it's mock, then they don't really execute them?
I think they do. I think it's more of like it's not maybe relevant for the reasons for why they're doing it. It's like the psychological aspect is the reason.
Okay, because if they're just like psyching someone out, like giving them a major mind fuck, like,
I mean, that would,
that's pretty messed up.
Yeah, I mean, I could
put them in the guillotine, it comes down, but it's really like a party guillotine where it has like the half circle cut out and it doesn't really cut off their head.
I mean, it could be, and because part of it too that they talked about was like incommunicado, like, you know, isolation, like getting no communication at all. So yeah, I wouldn't put it past. And then more like ecological tortures, so destroying infrastructure. I skipped one too for social torture, like breaking up families. Scorched earth policy, where they go and just burn farmlands. Putting landmines, poisoning wells, rivers, things like that. I like just reading all these things. I'm like, how would you feel safe ever?
Well, you wouldn't ever.
Yeah. And that's like one of the biggest things with trauma is the whole thing with treating trauma is that you have to establish safety. And what does that mean? And what does that look like? And if they, you know, go into a counseling office, but then going back home and nothing's safe, it doesn't apply. Your brain's never going to learn that effectively.
Right. Well, from, you know, our point of view, what we would do is we would focus on, you know, safety planning, and we wouldn't actually,
because it's a crisis,
take a person to that level of vulnerability where they're processing the trauma at that point. It would be about protection
because they're just in a crisis still. So really the aim for a lot of this war is to destroy the people's identity, culture, beliefs, language, foods, in order to make them submit to newly imposed ones. Wars destroy society's infrastructure and their systems. Wars are coercive to disempower and indoctrinate. Torture is commonly used to ensure submission. Rape of women is used as a weapon of war to change genetic makeup. Some wars carry out genocides, as was seen in Rwanda and Darfur. Such traumatic events go beyond normal human experiences and lead to post-traumatic sequels that go on for generations.
Right. Yeah. And that could be because the parents just pass along that fear in the upbringing, or it could be, you know, some people believe in eugenics. Now, I know that term has a lot of negative connotations because it got roped in with racism, but it was originally out there to look at it in a helpful view.
Yeah, and genetic maybe dispositions.
Experiencing this trauma does something to the DNA that can be passed on.
Well, and what we know just in like the research of rats is that if a mother rat is nurturing to baby rat, that rat feels safe and handles anxiety better and actually releases like healthier levels of cortisol in their brain, that stress hormone, and that can be passed down through generations. But if that is a mom that's, and the word neglectful here may mean something like more attuned to threats outside, not as nurturing, that can be passed down through generations too.
It really just kind of fucks up the division between nature and nurture at that point.
Yeah.
If your nurture is being passed on through your nature.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that you can't learn or do other things, or but if your environment becomes the light switch to some of those symptoms,
it's more challenging.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. So the victims of Africa's wars are more likely to be civilians, which the most recent count was more than 70% of casualties in recent African conflicts have been non-combatants. The majority of these end up being women, children, and the elderly.
The most vulnerable.
Yep. The poor and uneducated make up the bulk of the victims.
Not that women are vulnerable.
No, and actually
But they may not receive the training or have the resources because of gender differences in the society.
And I'm going to talk about some of those. I'm glad you brought them up because it actually dives in a little bit more than I have heard it done in the past. So the young and educated, especially men, would flee into exile, but that robs Africa of social capital for development. So the survivors who stay there end up suffering pretty significantly economically as well. So they suffer physically. Diseases become common with epidemics, neglected health. Were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, you paused.
I'm thinking.
Oh.
I'm taking it in.
Okay, okay.
My brain is awash with new knowledge.
So there's more to come. So socially, whole communities become marginalized, creating transgenerational effects. Law and order breaks down, giving way to militarization and political regression. Population displacements lead to refugees, asylum seekers, and running into exile, which can create a lot of what they labeled here as brain drain and flight of social capital. Children of war. So this is another one that was pretty interesting to learn about. Many orphans and vulnerable children with no adults to care for them creates this phenomenon of sibling-headed households, or they're called CODOs, children on their own. CODO, right? Some are unwanted or unaccepted in their community, being products of rape or incest.
So they're abandoned.
Yeah. On rare occasions, as war rages on, some become abandoned to grow up in the bush or forest as feral children. Children in war-torn areas are often orphaned, malnourished, and don't go to school. They can live in IDP camps, are malnourished, stunted, depressed. Many end up developing epilepsy, and they often grow up in urban centers then, where they become what they reference, street children or prostitutes. Many girls become sex workers for survival. All these children become really lumped into this street living, which often involves drug and alcohol addiction with other crimes. There are some faith-based organizations that try to help. However, like without policy changes and bigger, it's just kind of an endless flow. It's not fixing the problem, but it is an intervention that's helping or trying to help. Okay. And then there are, so those are children of war, and then there are child soldiers. So UNICEF defines child soldiers as any person under 18 who's associated with an armed force or armed group in any capacity. So that could be cooks carrying heavy loads or firing. Child soldiers are often forcibly recruited. They're brutalized, cruelly abused by arms groups. They're often forced to commit atrocities themselves, and oftentimes on members of their own community and their families. They subsequently suffer massive mental health problems, and reintegration is really difficult for these children. Could imagine. One research study found that the prevalence of PTSD in former Ugandan children ranged between 27 and 34.9% of the child soldiers. Another study, though, with those same children said that 97 to 98% of them had some traumatic stress symptoms. They just didn't qualify for the full diagnosis.
So, not only seeing it, but forced to be a part of it.
Yeah, and possibly hurting your own family and community. Then there's women survivors of war. So this is kind of what we were talking about a minute ago. Many women are sexually and physically abused in war. There's a lot of gender-based violence. Rape and gang rape, abduction, sex slavery, defilement, and forced marriage are common. Many young girls are lured into fighting men into sex exchanges for food, security, shelter, and financial assistance. For survival, they follow men wherever they move. A phenomenon. I'm having
a hard time with that word.
Yes. Been a day called camp following, and many engage in survival sex. So they really did. And just a side note here, even the UN peacekeepers have been found guilty of this, of having sex with the women and offering food, like basically bribing them for sex. The women, though, like I just really want to stress that the are really have been seen as like the spiritual and community, like the glue. So they really have suffered and endured a lot, but it also in the research, it shows that they are very committed and strong women who, you know, despite all of this are really a strength in the communities.
They're probably resilient as fuck.
Right? So there's a lot of internal displacement and refugees where they have to flee for food and safety. The vast majority, again, are women, children, and the elderly. Mental health problems are related to various phases of displacement. So there's pre-flight phase, which can include physical and emotional trauma to the individual or family. The witnessing of murder and social upheaval. So that's like the what happens before. And then flight involves the uncertain journey from the host country to the resettlement site, which can have a lot of dangerous journeys in between. And then there is the, once they get there, you are now in a resettlement process that challenges their culture, community, and there's a lot of language gaps. So it's really just this kind of three-part turmoil that mm-hmm. they go through. Mm-hmm. And like we think about like refugees in the US.
Yeah, here in Spokane, we have quite a bunch.
Yeah, there's like a center in the valley. I saw that at one point.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you're just that whole experience of displacement and just trying to find your way in a whole new culture after escaping a traumatic environment, like I just can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and so that journey alone has caused PTSD symptoms with depression, generalized anxiety, panic attacks, adjustment disorders, substance abuse, with many people committing suicide. Children and adolescents often have the highest levels of PTSD, from 50% to 90%, and major depression from 6% to 40%. Anxiety. So this I found interesting in Africa, mental health problems that were caused by war were seen as an annoyance, and they call them annoying anxieties and depressions, not suitable for treatment with Western medicine. So they'd get a lot of traditional or faith healing for yeah. anxiety and depression.
I think you have to have a culturally appropriate response to mm-hmm. any treatment, medical, mental health. It's the only way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So war as a traumatic event has brought on a specific constellation of severe, prolonged, emotional, and physically disabling symptoms, especially with the war-related PTSD, depression, and anxiety. The presentation can look really different. So like all these different things we talked about, it really makes that DSM-5 diagnosis feel lacking. So I have just the main sections here that I was just going to. So A is experiencing or witnessing a traumatic event. Okay. Re-experiencing a traumatic event as as recollections, intrusive thoughts, nightmares, flashbacks, avoidance reminders, hyperarousal, duration of symptoms for more than a month. There can also be culturally influenced symptoms. Which could include things like spirit possession states and dissociations can be in there. What's interesting is that's there, but I don't remember reading that in the main list. Do you? Because I don't.
Well, where did you get that from?
Well, this is specifically from...
Because like I have a DSM literally on the floor right there.
Yeah.
I feel like we should look it up because I don't think it's...
I don't think it's there. Actually in there. I think, I think that this author...
was expanding on that to to give some definition.
Yeah.
But unless you do research, you're not going to know how to expand that definition.
Mm-mm. Well, yeah, like if you didn't know any of this, you're not going to include it. Like you wouldn't know that if somebody said that their spirit was possessed, that could be taken a lot of different ways for a Western counselor.
Counselor might think they have delusional disorder or they're schizophrenia, psychotic.
Yeah. So where it could actually be a culturally influenced symptom. So There's a researcher.
You want me to get my DSM?
You do that. I'll read you this part. So Bracken and Summerfield, who did a lot of this research, argue that PTSD is a peculiar construct of the West and denied its universal application to non-Western cultures. However, various workers have described a core set of symptoms that they feel like could apply. They study PTSD symptom expression in different cultures and found that by listening simultaneously to the literal spoken language, known cultural metaphors, and observing body language, one is better able to comprehend human suffering in the care of the traumatized. So, like, just that part makes me feel like our DSM-5 is a horrible structure.
Which we've right said
that, I know,
over
I know.
And over and over.
But just that statement, like, yes, we should fully understand, and it should be a guideline to understand the literal spoken language.
Tool, but not a rule. But yeah. It's a rule.
It's a rule. It is a rule. You can't even give somebody help if they have an insurance if they don't have one of these diagnoses.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm all echoey to myself in my head.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, you sound fine to me.
Okay, cool. Trying to find the PTSD here.
So actually, I'll have to check out that book you got. So this next part that it says, though, I really like. So these workers who actually work with these different cultures have given rise to the notion of post-traumatic culture-bound syndromes, which could then have many different classifications based on the culture. So there's PTSD type, which is kind of the bigger one that is most well known, or not the bigger, but the one most well known.
Yeah, that's not in here.
It's not? Oh. As I'll say, I honestly didn't double check, but when I read that, I've read that DSM so many times.
So many times.
I would have been impressed if I saw that.
I mean, maybe it's in, like, you know how they have that section where it kind of goes into...
Oh, you mean at the very back?
Yeah, like more information, like this section.
I got invited to write a book chapter on, what is it, on addiction studies, and then the other one's on supervision. And my whole goal is to put the diversity and ethics at the front. Because every book I've ever read,
it shouldn't be a fucking footnote.
Yeah, it's always
front and center.
It's always like at the end as an afterthought, and it gets like the least amount of time. And when really that should be informing everything else you do, so it should be at the front. DSM-5.
Well, I'm part of a work group, part of the University of Washington Harborview Medical Center's CBT Plus work group, and we're really focusing on developing some guidelines that do put culture first and foremost. So it's cool. Mm-hmm. We just had a meeting last week, and we're really developing some good questions and things to think about when you are assessing for trauma.
That's really good.
It is really good.
Good job, you.
Thank you.
So mass trauma, as it happens in war, is almost always accompanied by high rates of PTSD in adult and children. It really destroys respect for human life, personal dignity, and what constitutes a good and meaningful life. It is through cultural traditions that man values human life, constructs meaning of life, and respects personal dignity of others. In Africa, this is embodied in the concept of Ubuntu, or humanness. We have also talked about that before.
We have. Ubuntu. I know. Humanity.
So just to hit on some of those unusual forms of PTSD, which I don't like unusual forms because it's not very unusual in Africa. It seems to be pretty common.
No, that's judgy.
Yeah.
Place
I think,
to come from.
I think this is trying to really have somebody who's very Western culture, like buy into the different perspective, the way it's written. Like they really try to like, here's how it relates to the DSM-5. Like they're trying to justify mm-hmm. the work. But I like the idea of that, the statement of post-traumatic culture-bound syndromes.
Love it.
Okay. So the dissociative ones we already kind of know about, so I'm not going to dive into those. The dancing mania, which we've talked about, they also had cases in South African schoolgirls who had post-apartheid uncertainties where there was a lot of movement that looked like dancing, who believed, so a lot of the people there believe that this had happened because of outside agents, witchcraft or demons influencing them. They're often preceded by mass psychic trauma and are characterized by intense mass effect, anxiety, and dissociations. In Africa, they're often attributed to demons, wronged or angry spirits in the land of the dead. In today's Africa, attempts at treatment by prayers and traditional healing often doesn't work. Successful treatment often ties in more with cultural supports and finding effective ways to get treatment, like culturally sensitive CBT. Okay, cults. We've talked about cults. Not going to dive into them huge here, but obviously a way to brainwash people into, especially impoverished people, into feeling like there's hope. There were a couple mass deaths because of cults in Africa. Mm-hmm. They get more frequent after there's been a war.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of, one of the biggest ones actually happened in the wake of the AIDS epidemic. So that happened, and then there was like cults popping up, and
people are trying to find meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And belonging, and cults offer that.
Yeah, it really makes them like there's a savior that's going to help them get them out of the suffering and misery. The rape trauma syndrome. The rape of young girls, including gang rape, was commonly reported. It was seen in northern Uganda and other areas of conflict in Africa. Rape isn't usually reported by the women victims for cultural fear of shame and rejection by their husbands or if the rapist, retaliation.
Mm.
Retaliation. Rape trauma syndrome usually presents as associated to other psychiatric disorders like chronic lower abdominal pain, depression, amnesia, dissociation, conversion disorders with like lower limb weakness, and often suicide attempts. The women may present after many years of failed treatments. They can also have physical thing like transmission of HIV or AIDS. Culturally sensitive trauma focused CBT has been useful for women who have rape trauma syndrome. The nodding syndrome, that one we talked about, it was children ages 3 to 18. It was a sporadic cases of nodding diseases also in Tanzania, which were not related to trauma, and they labeled them as epilepsy. But in northern Uganda's war, it only appeared in 1997 after that conflict. And then once the conflict went away, no new cases came back.
So fascinating to me.
Nodding syndrome was characterized by malnutrition, stunted growth, mental retardation, seizures in about 50% of the cases. And that's what made them lean that epilepsy side. However, the affected, Ekoli people called it Yengowik and recognized it as a new disease in their midst and related it to the insurgency war. They did not call it epilepsy. They believed the nodding syndrome to be caused by dead people's spirits, which had come to haunt the living for a variety of reasons. Reportings of nodding syndrome first appeared in 1997 and reached epidemic proportions in 2000-2003 when people were moved into the IDP camps. And then, like I mentioned, they went away after that. They did some studies if it was from rotting food, infections, just like the dancing plague, how they were trying to find all the causes to it. Mm-hmm. Clinical evaluations and field observations revealed that Nodding Syndrome children had been exposed to severe war-related psychological and physical trauma, that also included things like untreated CNS infections like malaria, meningitis, and malnutrition, possibly causing the seizures. So there may have been medical reasons for the seizures, but still doesn't explain the psychological trauma part. Why it's
related to the trauma, yeah. And yeah. My mind is going to, is it self-soothing maybe?
Maybe.
Like a rocking back and forth that makes your head go back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Or, when if you think about like a kid that age that got such heavy heads, it would be, it'd be very noticeable.
I mean, I got a heat on me.
You got a what?
I got a big heed. Look at this.
Oh, big heed?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a three-head. Are you three-head or four-head?
Three what?
Three-head.
I don't know what that means.
So that's how many fingers? Yeah, so three-head is like a three-finger forehead. I have a three-head. Okay. Some people have a forehead.
No, I don't think like my forehead is huge. I just think my whole entire cranium is pretty big.
You got a big cranium. Is it because you got a big brain?
It's totally all brains, obviously.
The biggest brain. Okay, and the last one that I really wanted to cover really quickly is appetite aggression, because this was interesting and I hadn't heard of it before. So internalized or self-stigma is defined as a state in which an individual accepts and agrees with societal prejudices about their particular condition and applies it to themselves. It's associated with lower self-esteem, and hope may carry on for generations and negatively influence behavior. So the sum of this is that because of internalized beliefs of hatred, stigma, discrimination, they then internalize that and believe it themselves. Mm. And that creates things like PTSD, depression, anxiety, substance use, and then leads to aggression and violence in their own communities. Appetitive aggression is designed as their perpetration of violence and the infliction of harm to another person for the purpose of lessening one's own pain, for relief of anxiety and inner tension, or just for quote-unquote fun. Traumatic experiences lead to emotional deregulation, which in turn leads to easy irritability and ultimately aggression. The resulting violence results from a form of reactive aggression, the need to revenge for relief of their own inner tension.
I get it. So it's appetitive because you're eating something that's been fed to you.
Yeah.
Societally.
Yeah, it's very interesting because you think about it, and I mean, that's how we would explain, you know, maybe a child who experienced severe trauma who then murders somebody, or like, it's that just
somebody that's just angry because of the shit they've been handed their whole life.
And they come to believe it about themselves, which is one of the biggest.
Mm-hmm. Well, because if you react in anger, people are going to react to that. And then you're going to just be getting messages that continue that loop.
Well, and it was really interesting, too, because they said that temporarily, it actually reduced their trauma-related distress.
So they're releasing something that's important.
There was a study a long time ago, again, going back to rats here, but the rat that stressed out rat that had another rat that it could bite actually lowered its stress response. So having that other person that you can pick on, which explains a lot of bullying behavior, temporarily reduces the anxiety, which is why it probably continues in kind of almost like an addiction-based style. And really, if you're in an environment where survival is tied with violence, that's where you start to see it becoming more of a cultural problem where it goes across generations.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it could explain a lot of things. Mob violence, intimate partner violence.
Gang violence.
Yeah, child abuse. A lot of those, what we call like a vicious cycle, those type of things. Riot suppression, toxic stress. Like there's so many different things that fit under that category.
Mm-hmm.
Returned formerly abducted girls who suffered trauma and sexual abuse often felt this way, but they, in treatment, the most effective thing was actually narrative therapy for them, where they got to reconstruct an autobiography of themselves and a memory of their past experiences. This provides them an understanding of why they feel and behave the way they do and reduce interfering tension and kind of work on recreating what their future behavior can look like.
Narrative therapy is cool.
I like narrative therapy, yeah. So that's the gist of, honestly, this was a huge topic, but those are the highlights.
20 pages there.
I know. But that was the highlights that I found. I found it actually really, really interesting.
Really interesting. I have so many thoughts on the nodding syndrome.
I know. I feel like we have to do more research there.
Yeah. I mean,
I was thinking of like medical journals, see what's
self-soothing.
There.
But then I was also thinking, could it be the healthy tremoring that is a trauma release response that has been pathologized by Western medicine and is actually a symptom in the fucking DSM?
Wait, can you say that? Can you say that one more time? Sorry.
Tremoring.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like it's been pathologized,
even though that's actually like a
it's healthy
the body's cue for self-soothing, because that's what a lot of the reports are, is that it's at least appears involuntary.
Yes, and I've been trained to be able to bring that about voluntarily, that mm-hmm. same motion. I learned that when I was in my yoga teacher training, mm-hmm. and so it's a natural response that helps mm-hmm. us relieve stress and anxiety and trauma responses, but it's been pathologized, and it's actually in several diagnoses in the DSM mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. a symptom.
Yeah.
Means it's something wrong.
Like it's a wrong thing.
And you have to stop somebody doing that.
Yeah. I was reading a book. I'm going to have to remember which one. Reading a book about trauma specifically, and the author opens it up describing how she was in a car accident. And she's a trauma specialist, and talking about a lot of the things that you are. And she said she was strapped down to a gurney, and she was like shaking, and they were like trying to like wrap her and keep her from shaking.
Yeah, exactly.
And she just kept telling, no, 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 let me. And so they actually like let her do it, and she was just shaking.
Yeah.
And then Shake she goes out. On to talk about like that's the body's natural process mm-hmm. for releasing trauma. And if you stifle it in the moments of the trauma, it's going to come up later on because the body keeps the score. Great yeah, book. Exactly. You haven't read it.
Yeah. So there's a book that's specifically on this if you're interested in learning more about the trauma release exercises.
Bessel van der Kolk?
No, this is by Dr. David Berselli, who I went to.
Oh, a different one. Okay.
An awesome 3-day workshop just on this. We mm-hmm. we spent 3 days like laying on the floor, shaking our shit out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. Fascinating, in fact.
I could see it being really interesting. See, like just to see what's in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the patterns, like everybody has their own organic patterns, and they they're connected with your personal trauma history.
Must you do this in front of other people?
Yes.
That sounds traumatizing.
You can do it on your own, but part of like, if I took like, that was like the one-third of like certification.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go on because I just haven't had time, but part of it is you do it in groups. Like mm-hmm. that's the whole thing. And you process
it's like
it together.
Vulnerability aspect with it too.
And just that, you know, that there's no weirdness and
there's no
uncomfortable.
There's no pathologizing DSM-5.
Yeah. I was super uncomfortable about it at first, but after 3 days of it, you just get over it. I mean, that's an exposure therapy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Well, I'm glad that we got to give another dig against the DSM today.
I hate that thing. I'm going to punt it.
It's over there. No, I see it.
Oh, there it is. I was wondering where it is. I kept looking for it. Did you see me?
Yeah.
Like darting eyes. Like, where'd it go? It's like a fucking spider in here. Got to find it. Catch it. Get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, can you be... You didn't finish your story that you had to call your child downstairs to kill the spider for you.
Yeah, he did it.
Yeah, he did it.
I mean, normally he likes to just pick them up with his bare hands and put it out, but it wasn't that kind of spider. It was that kind of like lays flat against the wall.
Yeah.
You can't really grab them.
Yeah. It's the like, if you try to grab me, I'm going to end up down your shirt somehow.
Yeah. The real fast, scrabbly kind.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fast. Yeah. He liked to pick them up with his hands.
He's not scared of them.
gross.
Unless they get to a certain point, like those hobo spiders or wolf spiders.
Oh, the big, like...
If they get to it, you know, if their legs are going to go over the palm of your hand, then it's like, no, thank you. Nobody wants to mess with
this. If that spider looks at me and I see it, like, sizing me up, like, meal-wise...
Okay, I'm getting another cider. You talk to the people.
See, I've only had a little bit of mine because I talk so much.
Talk to them.
Okay. It was hilarious watching her barrel roll. And anyways, she's pretty funny when she gets scared. It's actually one of my favorite things and why I yelled spider, spider, spider.
Okay, I'm back. So you want to guess my topic?
Why would I know your topic?
Do you want to, like, just give it one guess?
Well, I'm going to be wrong.
Okay.
I barely came up with my own topic. Thinking of yours is not going to be in the realm of possibility.
Okay. My topic is hippos.
Oh, my goodness. I love hippos. I'm so glad you did this. I saw a hippo at the zoo, and he's so cute. Here they are, mean AF.
So, yeah, hungry, hungry hippos. But we're not talking about the game.
So this is not a game.
This is not a drill. Okay,
random side note, because it kind of relates. The movie on Netflix called Zoo, not good.
It's coming up on my page.
It's
so.
Not good. And it's kind of about, like, all the animals, starts with wild animals, and it becomes like dogs and cats start plotting about how to kill people. The tables turn.
Well, I'm a little bit of a believer in the animal conspiracy that they are out to take over and get us.
That legit may be true. However, this movie was bad. I don't recommend it.
Okay, I won't watch it.
Okay, don't do it.
I'm talking about not those little pygmy hippos, but the common hippo. But first, I'm going to talk about...
And not the me putting on my pants today.
Hippo. Oh, Macy. Self-deprecating humor will get you nowhere or everywhere.
Maybe it'll get me... Oh. Was that a fat joke? Get me everywhere? I just need to get me exercise.
Tomorrow we're skating.
Yeah.
And it'll be good for...
I just got no tonage anymore.
I know.
But... Soft and doughy, like a hippo. I feel like they actually have, like... I bet if I, like, touched a hippo's tummy, it wouldn't be soft.
Yeah, well, wait. You'll hear all about the tummies of the hippo.
Oh, my goodness. Tell me all about hippos.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
I'm going to start out with Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos.
Yes.
In the late 1980s, with his cocaine money, Pablo Escobar built a 7,400-acre lavish hacienda hideaway.
I want a hacienda hideaway?
In Colombia, along with a 1,000-seat bull ring, swimming pools, and an airstrip. His estate had its own personal zoo, or as I like to call it, a menagerie.
Menagerie.
A menagerie, darling.
Just makes me think of Ace Ventura.
This menagerie included four hippos.
Huh.
One male and three females, because that's how hippos roll. Escobar had purchased the hippos from a zoo in the U.S. After Escobar was gunned down in 1993 by the Colombian National Police because of his cocaine doings, zoos and private collectors acquired all the animals from his private zoo. All the animals, that is, except the hippos. They were too dangerous to seize and move, and so they were just left on the estate.
I want a moat with hippos to guard my dwelling menagerie.
It would work.
Either that or geese.
That would work too. They shit a lot though, geese. Well, so do hippos, as we'll learn. In 2009...
I feel like you learned a lot about hippos.
No, I never have I spent so much time watching hippo videos as I have in this past week. In 2009, Colombia's environmental agency ordered the hippos, who began to stray away from the estate, to be destroyed. So this is like, when was he killed? 1993, so 2009. So like 16 years later. Do you see that math? I just did that. That was like mental math. Snap, snap, snap.
I just tuned out for all of it.
This hunting party included more than a dozen soldiers from a Colombian army battalion, two Porsche salesmen armed with long-range rifles.
As is the norm.
And a taxidermist who I guess was going to get the body and make it a statue thing. Or like a hippo head on a wall type of deal. An adult male named Pepe, poor thing, was poor trapped Pepe. Down and shot. Many Colombians became upset to see the image of Pepe's carcass surrounded by soldiers and hunters in camouflage. At that time, there had not been in 28 years any documented case of an attack against people. Or that they damaged crops. So with the killing denounced, the hippos were left alone. And here's a picture of them that went outside with the dead hippo and all of them, the hunting party. I mean, look at them. There's like so many of them, like 20 people and one poor Pepe.
Bunch of scaredy cats. That's insulting to cats. Bunch of scaredy Humes.
So they started going out. They decided to hunt him down, but there was backlash after they killed Pepe. So then they decided to leave the hippos alone. Over time, the hippos wandered far and wide.
Why are you holding the mic like that?
And multiplied, because I can't hear myself very good. So I'm trying to like make my mouth hole closer to the mic.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Okay. I'll back off now.
Yeah, just stop grabbing it. It looks weird. Freaking me out a little bit.
Isn't that how the rock stars do it?
Not with two hands.
Some do. Do it with feeling. So the hippos, they started out at the menagerie, and then they wandered far and wide and multiplied.
Menage a trois.
As hippers do. Yeah, well, it started out with one male, three females.
But I thought they killed Pepe.
I think already they were multiplied. This was after they were out.
Okay.
They'd already gone out, so there may have been...
The babages happened.
Yes.
Already.
So today, these hippos, and this is the connection between our podcast topics, these hippos today are the only hippos in the wild outside of where?
Uganda.
Africa. Africa. Yeah, so our topics are connected by Africa.
My topic was connected with like six topics.
Everything's connected.
We need a t-shirt that says that.
Oh my
God. Everything's connected.
I will get my graphic design sent on that right away.
Work on it.
These hippos, their population has grown to between 80 and 100 hippos today.
Holy cow bonanza. How fast is the gestation period on these things?
I think it's almost like humans, like 8 months or something.
Wow.
But
busy.
It started with one male, three females, so the seed can sow itself widely. So it's estimated that in another 20 to 40 years, there will be thousands of fucking hippos in Colombia.
Wow.
The area is the perfect habitat for hippos, and it's deemed hippo heaven.
Aw.
So it's all green and lush, and there's waterways, and they have no natural predators there at all. And so their population is just going to continue to grow. There's been calls by some to sterilize the hippos, but apparently that's really difficult.
I could imagine.
Because it's hard to like get a hippo.
Yeah.
And
to get it and let alone get its privates.
Yeah. And apparently it costs $40,000 to capture one hippo and sterilize it. Wow. And so when they
it's started, not just like a rubber band like goats.
And cows. They do that with cows.
They band them.
The calves, yeah.
And then they just fall off.
My ex-husband had to do that when he was a farm
I've,
guy.
Yep.
When he was younger.
Goat life.
And he told very graphically many times. He tells a tale of how they would just fall off, and then you would step on them, and they would make a horrible squishy experience.
Well, I told you what my dad did with Ernie, my horse's testicles, right?
Remind me.
He saved them in his fridge because he was going to make them as earrings for my grandma.
Oh, yeah. Whatever happened to those frozen testes?
I think he ended up somehow the cat got them.
In the freezer?
I think at some point he threw them out and the cat got them. I think when grandma rejected the idea. But bad. I remember them being in the freezer for a very long time.
I'd just be afraid I would accidentally mistake it for something else. Like,
what would
some
you mistake it for?
Mochi, for example.
Ew.
And then just eat them.
Oh, my dad said wrong. Tell me the correct. I always get his stories wrong. You tell me what happened.
Yeah, Dad. You tell us.
It's okay. But you can keep going. I'll just interrupt you.
Okay. So between 2011 and 2019, when they're doing the sterilization campaign, only 4 were captured and castrated or sterilized because they're extremely fast and violent, these hippos. You can't just catch a hippo. It's not as easy as it sounds.
No, I saw a baby hippo, and that thing is like the two of my dogs. My dog is like a giant sausage.
There have been calls by some officials and scientists to cull them, which means kill them. Cull is like kill, but it's like
it tries to confuse the layperson. It tries to confuse
the mind as if it's a different thing than killing, but cull is kill. But the locals love their hippos, and so the locals protested.
I protest.
So right now, the cocaine hippos, where they're at, is ecologists are studying them, studying the effects of the hippos to see if they're helpful or harmful to the ecosystem. And they're trying to study them without labels or judgment. And nobody,
like cocaine hippos.
Nobody. That makes them more alluring, I think. Okay, with that tagline.
I was waiting, like, are these things stuffed with cocaine? No.
No.
Okay.
So nobody had been, no humans had been attacked until last May, when a farmer was chased down and seriously injured. So this prompted another look at the hippo situation.
Would you like the actual horse testicle story?
Yes, tell me the testicle. Okay. Tea.
He took them from the cats initially. Oh yeah, that's right, because the vet like tossed them to the cats. So my dad took them from the cats and then was drying them out in the sun to make earrings.
The fuck.
But ravens swooped down and flew off with the testicles.
This is only something that would happen in North Spokane.
To my dad.
What the fuck. Well, that's just too bad.
Just, you know, shucks.
You want to learn some hippo facts?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Hippos live today in sub-Saharan Africa and in Colombia.
Colombia.
They are the closest terrestrial animals to whales, which I found interesting.
I find that interesting as well. What was I watching? Oh, the Croods, a cartoon, but they showed like the evolutionary, like funny joke about whales, and it was whales with feet, and they do look like hippos. See?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Dominant male hippos can weigh 6,000 pounds or more.
Jesse's clear. Said needed to know how to bait crows. Thanks.
Just take some balls.
Got to dry them out a little bit. They like ball them a little crispy.
So dominant male hippos lead hippo pods. That's like a hippo club or a squad or, you know, like a crew.
The cool kids in the hippo club.
Females and most other males, non-dominant males, weigh between 3,500 and 4,500 pounds. So that's still heavy. That's a lot. And
what does that equate to? I need context.
I feel like 6,000 pounds is like a Geo Metro. I might be wrong.
Or bigger. Is that like my 70 Chevelle?
Maybe.
Or is that my Outback wagon?
I think your Outback wagon is heavier.
Heavier?
Yeah, that might be like 8K. I'm just pulling these facts out of my ass. You know that, right? I don't actually know. So hippos live about 40 years.
Oh, that's a decent amount of time for an animal.
In a hippo harem.
Ooh, is that a...
There are about 20 females.
Dang, I want a harem. Can I be... Is there a lead in a harem?
Well, it's a dominant male. So there's a dominant male, and then there's
females. This is starting to sound like roller derby, and it's frustrating me.
And then there's kids in there, and then there can be some non-dominant males also in the pod.
Does the dominant male tell the other females what to do and act more important than they really are? Because the women could just do that themselves.
And weirdly, the dominant males have stripes. Black and white stripes.
WTF. Is that true?
No.
Oh.
I'm just fucking with you. I was going with your ref theme. I know where you're going. Hippos have really poor eyesight because they have the little eyes, kind of little piggy eyes. But they have an excellent sense of smell. So kind of like snakes. I like when
they flip their ears.
Like snakes, they don't see that well, but they have other senses, so they know where their prey is. Which is why you shouldn't do what I've done in the past when I got bit by a snake, which is hold a live rat by its tail and swing it in front of the snake. Because they're not going to be able to tell what is your hand and what is the rat. And it ends badly.
I've never done that. I've never been bitten by a snake.
Don't do it. Snake bites fucking hurt.
I could imagine.
No, it was real bad.
I think a hippo bite would suck worse.
Well, let's get into it. I wanted to talk about hippo skills.
What?
Hippos live in fresh water. So they come into contact with humans who in Africa are utilizing the most valuable and limited resource, water.
Water.
They can move lightning fast and are surprisingly nimble in and out of the water.
Did you say snimble?
Snimble. It's surprisingly nimble.
Is it like swift and nimble?
It's swimble? Surprisingly nimble.
I like swimble. Swimble. My dad always taught me if a word sounds better, use it, even if it doesn't exist.
Hippos are snimble. I was surprised. I watched a lot of videos of hippos doing crazy hippo shit, and they are fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was actually shocked when I saw my first hippo skills.
And you're like, whoa, dang.
Swimming in the water. I'm like, hippos do that? What?
I watched the only hippo video I can actually like think of right now is when I watched there was a wounded little baby, I don't know, deer, savannah deer thing that was in the water, and crocodiles were trying to attack it, and the hippos were actually like chasing the crocodiles off and were like helping nudge the little deer thing to the side.
The deer thing,
whatever, I don't know, it probably died after all. It did get bit a couple times, but at least it got to the shore.
Surprised the story didn't involve a wildebeest.
Wildebeest.
They get killed so often in Africa. Like every animal documentary, it's a poor wildebeest being taken down by one predator or another.
That just makes me think of Lion King and Mufasa dying from the wildebeest stampede.
Yeah, because the wildebeest are like scared. They want to get the fuck out of there because they know they're victims.
Yeah. Like, oh, oops, we stepped on a lion. Sorry, crowd. Who's going to eat us in 5 minutes?
How fast can hippos run, do you ask?
Am I asking or am I guessing?
Do you want to guess or ask?
I kind of want to guess.
Okay. How fast can hippos run?
42 miles an hour.
No.
No.
But they can run 20 miles an hour.
That is
which
pretty,
is really
that's
fast.
Good. Yeah.
I mean, imagine a hippo running up my street right now.
I can.
20 miles an hour. Like, that's fast.
Yeah, don't run at me at 20. Isn't that, like, what's the fastest human speed?
I don't know.
I think it's faster than 20 miles an hour.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. Somebody Google it.
Google it. Help us out.
So you might think, because you look at a hippo, they look kind of puffy and they have like little fat stubby legs.
It's like a giant bulldog.
But don't be fooled.
Mm-mm.
They can run like a bat out of hell. Here's another hippo skill. their jaws can open to 180 degrees like this.
After I got it open.
So it's completely flat open. Ah. So they can just take in everything.
I can only do like a pie size.
Yeah. And they can clamp their jaws down with a force 10 times that of human jaws.
And human jaws can actually bite down pretty dang hard at full capacity.
And hippo lower canines can grow to more than a foot and a half long.
What?
So that's this long. Yeah. Real dang. Long.
Real long.
Adult hippos can stay underwater.
27 and a half miles per hour is human.
I don't believe it. Why are hippos chasing down humans then?
Probably because humans underestimate them. Maybe because it's a child or a farmer, not because this is probably the fastest person.
Okay. Like an Olympic.
Yeah. Not like a, I've been sitting for a while and my leg's numb. I got a hurt knee and I'm just hobbling along.
Well, you saw my spider reaction. I'm hoping I have an equally impressive hippo reaction. Adult hippos can stay underwater for 3 to 5 minutes at a time. Mm. That's a long time before they need to resurface to breathe. And I thought this was really fascinating. The process of surfacing to breathe is subconscious. So they do it in their sleep. So they'll be underwater, floating, sleeping, and just unconsciously surface to breathe when they need to and go back down. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
So they don't wake up. They just like come up, breathe, go back down.
I mean, maybe it's because they drown for a minute. And then they go back up.
Well, if you think they're related to whales, it kind of makes sense.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that already.
They're a terrestrial, the closest terrestrial relative to whales. So because hippos can stay underwater for so long, it makes them really hard to spot because they're like under there. They could be under there for like 5 minutes. You're not going to know a hippo's under there. If the water's murky, you're not going to see. So this was the part I found really surprising and about hippo skills is that they are hella fast swimming through the water. They torpedo through the water like a fucking torpedo. They cruise like a missile underwater and then burst up on the surface like Michael Phelps. Like just, but without the arms. But like
in the marijuana.
Imagine if Michael Phelps was swimming like with his arms to his side and just bursting out like a flipper. Torpedo. Yeah, that's what these hippos do. I was like, what the fuck? I had no idea. I mean, can you imagine you're in a boat? You're like, oh, let's do the African safari thing. And all of a sudden, you see like a little wake coming at your boat. And all of a sudden, this hippo just bursts out. And oh,
it makes me think of all those
crazy.
Like the stupid people who take pictures with wildlife, who like go and like try to get that photo and get way too close to wildlife. And then end up getting dragged off by a lion into the savannah. Like,
well, don't do that with a hippo.
Well, or
just don't.
Or a lion.
Well,
any of them.
I'll get into my hippo attack facts in a minute.
Keep going.
Whew. Hippos can't swim.
Say what?
Right.
They just sink swim. And then kick up.
They can, remember, they can run really fucking fast, 20 miles an hour.
Isn't that swimming, though?
No, so they're not actually swimming. And I saw this really cool video that showed the underwater view of what's happening. So they have 2-inch thick skin.
Wow.
So that's thick. That makes them waterproof. And so that's part of why they can be underwater for so long. And they're so dense with muscle. So it's not...
Yeah, it's not squishy.
It's muscle so that they sink in the water. So what they're actually doing is they're running along the bottom of the rivers and then they like push off. They like leap and they launch fucking forward like fucking hippo torpedoes.
Wow. It's not swimming. So it's launching.
It's running and launching.
So they got some badass hindquarters to push it.
I was just amazed. I had never really seen this kind of stuff going on. These videos.
Nature is some of the scariest.
So they chase down boats. They charge and attack boats. They either will leap onto them, like surge onto them, or they'll just bash into them and tip them over because they can torpedo through the water.
No thanks.
Here's another hippo skill. Pooping.
Is that just a hippo skill?
Hippos mark their territory by defecation.
Oh, I've seen their tail. Like, they flip it.
They spin it.
Yeah, it's like, fuh, 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 like fuh,
they
fuh,
spin
fuh.
Their tail around.
And it's like, feces, feces, feces.
Yes, they have those little hippo tails, and they're, so they're pooping. And it's like,
yeah.
And it spreads their poop far and wide.
Is that how they mark their territory?
Yeah, and by spinning it, it covers a greater area.
Yeah, I think humans got it wrong. Like, we're just pooping in a hole in one spot. And then we like wash it away. I need people to know this is my spot. So
what are you going to do, Macy? I don't think you thought this through.
No, I just imagine myself on the front porch and none of the things were flinging
shit.
Just like, well, I was trying to get like the spinning motion in my mind of what that would look like.
Well, we don't have tails.
I feel like I know it'd be a lot of jumping.
I think you'd mostly mark your territory on yourself.
On my front step. Okay, yeah. Well, that was a fun image.
Okay, let's get serious. Across Africa, hippos kill an estimated 500 people a year.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
A year.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this makes hippos the deadliest mammal after humans.
I would not have guessed that, but I knew that they were dangerous, but I didn't know.
Because they look kind of cute. And hippos.
Oh, they're slow.
And, you know, I grew up going to, like, the zoos in the Bay Area and, like, oh, there's a hippo in the water.
He's chill. He don't care.
Eating some lettuce. Like, mm-hmm. That was always what was going on.
It's like a big guinea pig.
So historically, like, back through time, human fatalities were often people killed on riverbanks early in the morning. The humans had to go to the rivers to fetch drinking water, and that would mean they would get in between
territory,
still grazing hippos, and the river. And so hippos come out to eat their vegetation, they're vegetarian, and so that people would be in between their food and their safe zone. And so people would get either gored or trampled as the hippos would run back to safety.
Mm.
Scientists think between 29 and 87% of hippo attacks have been fatal, and that you'd have a better chance of surviving a shark attack, a crocodile encounter, or a grizzly bear attack.
I have to tell you, in order of operations, shark attack is fear number one. Followed by, I don't know why, but I have really scary dreams about killer whales in shallow water. That obviously killer whales can't fit in, but that's what my nightmares are filled with. And then I'm scared of bears in the woods. When I have bear bells, I'm that person where I'm really just calling the cougar dinner bell.
So we had a question from mm-hmm. Jesse's Claire. Do they eat people or just murder for pleasure?
I think it's
murder for panic.
Yeah, I think it's like the, oh, I'm scared and I'm big and maybe I'll just two birds, one stone, because like you get rid of a threat and mm-hmm. I'm just going to smush you.
Yeah, or bite you.
I'm going to bite you.
Because I got a foot and a half long teeth.
Well, and you would like, where does this sense of fear come from if they're not like hunted and there's no...
Well, there's just come aggression. Out of, well, here.
Is this appetitive aggression where like they have some like low self-esteem maybe and they're internalizing that?
Oh, here it is. I skipped a whole paragraph.
Oh.
I was like, what's going on here? Okay. Let me go back to hippo facts because I missed an important paragraph that will reveal some things. The word hippopotamus, which is the full word, not hippo.
Hippopotamus.
It means river horse in Greek.
Ooh, that sounds pretty.
Hippos spend most of the day in the water napping. Mm-hmm. At night, they emerge from the water and eat 50 to 100 pounds of vegetation, which is a lot of grass. Hippos are different from all other large land mammals because they are semi-aquatic, which is cool.
Yeah.
They just hang out in the water. They stay cool in the water. They hump in the water, humping hippos.
Mm.
And they birth their babies in the water. So except when eating, hippos' life happens in the water. And hippos can become aggressive. Males become aggressive when defending their territory. Mm-hmm. And females will become aggressive when defending their young. So people
like a bear.
Venture into yeah. territory, the males are going to be on alert. And if mm-hmm. people get near the babies, the females are going to be
agitated. Like, that sounds like the same like bear behavior.
Yeah. So the attacks have been people have gotten too close, have been dragged into lakes, had their boats tipped over, or had their heads bitten off.
So, wow, that sucks.
Pretty drastic.
That's a bit much. Well, and I'm wondering if, like, the saving of, like, the little gazelle thing was more...
Oh, now it has a name. No, it's a gazelle.
It's a gazelle thing.
It's not the deer thing.
I don't know. It's my brain's slow today. And maybe it had more to do with there was another hostile and aggressive thing in their territory. And it's just like that, like, I can mess with my little brother, but you can't. So I'm going to protect him in this moment.
Could be. You want to hear a couple attack stories?
Yeah. Do they get their heads bitten off?
Not in these stories. So this is recent. Lake Naivasha in Kenya, hippo attacks are exploding in this area. And this is a result of floods and the economic fallout from COVID-19. So hungry fishermen are coming into conflict with hippos. This is very recent, just news. About 40 people were attacked by hippos on Lake Naivasha last year, and as many as 14 of them died. Here, the flooding has decreased the land area. So this has been pushing the humans and the hippos into conflict.
Humans.
Because there used to be more land area, but mm-hmm. now the hippos are coming on land to eat and the land is smaller.
Yeah.
And that's where the people live also. So they're coming and forced into close contact. The local hospitals treat 1 to 2 hippo victims each week.
What?
Yeah, that's a lot of hippo attacks.
That's like, as a nurse, is there specialized training for when your head gets bitten off by a hippo?
Well,
like, can you put it in a glass of milk and reattach it?
Well, if cryogenics are, you know, available, maybe. There you go. Put it on ice.
Yeah.
Like, what's his face's wiener? Blainer Bobbitt's husband's wiener.
We can call him a gazelle.
They put his wiener on ice in a little hot dog tray, and they were able to reattach it.
We never found out if it functioned properly, but.
No, it did.
It did.
Remember he did porns after that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then he fucked it up because he got like some weird surgery to make it like bigger.
Bigger. Oh, that's
right. And
then
it destroyed
it.
Yeah. And I don't think it functioned correctly after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get greedy.
Yeah. Surgery on the penile.
I mean, I think.
It's a bit much.
Be grateful that you have your ween back and it works.
You can only chop it once.
Don't chop it twice.
One then done, I always say.
Where am I? Okay. So one of the doctors at this local hospital, George Wabamba, shared about the situation.
Wait, what is his name?
Wabamba.
I love it.
It's cool. It's rhythmic. When you mention there's a hippo victim, everyone is anxious at the hospital, he says. You never know what you're going to get. Hippos can trample victims or drag them. So he said, sometimes it's just a bite and the hippo lets go. But you also get lots of abdominal injuries.
Ew, my soft spots.
And he said that the lacerations may be filled with soil and grass.
Ugh.
And we don't know what's in a hippo's mouth or what's in the water.
Germs, infection.
Such injuries require immediate attention, but victims don't arrive for hours, maybe, because the fishermen that are there when somebody gets attacked have to wait until it's safe to retrieve the victim. Because hippos are fucking scary, as we've covered.
I'd be like, be right there, Tom. Just,
we love you.
I'm going to wait till it goes down for a nap.
So when the hippo moves away, then they finally will be able to go in and they get the individual and then transport them to the hospital. But the local hospital is 24 miles away along rough roads on the far side of the lake.
So your open wounds are just being jostled.
Yeah.
By the way, I like transfer as well. I think
transfer.
Transfer.
I'm just making new words left and right.
Yeah, look at you.
I'm innovative.
You're innovative.
So Dr. Wabamba estimates that 40% of the hippo victims ultimately die. He recalled a 35-year-old fisherman he treated last year who was attacked before sunrise as he was placing his nets but didn't get to the hospital until noon. Mm. And some of his bowels were sticking out, Wabamba said. We repaired what could be repaired. This is what we call damage control surgery, but we couldn't save him. And less than an hour and a half after surgery, he died. So that's recent stuff. In 2014, there was an attack in Nigeria. 12 children and a villager were confirmed dead after a hippopotamus attacked their boat. And the students were aged 12 to 13, and they died when the boat that was transporting them across the Niger River was flipped by a hippo. And a number of students in this area take these boats to go to school on the other side of the river.
Wow. That would be rough. Like, that's your daily commute to school is through hippo-infested waters?
Hippo-infested waters.
Dang.
And last October...
You know, if the next person that says to me that white privilege isn't a thing, I'm going to ask them, have you traveled via HIPAA-infested waters recently to school?
Every day?
As a child? Oh, you're uphill both ways barefoot? Wah. Yeah. Hippos.
Hippos. That's all you have to say. Hippos.
Hippos. Hippopotamus.
River horse.
River horse is going to stamp your face.
Last October, a hippo dragged a child to his death from the shore into Lake Victoria in Kenya. And I watched the video of this incident.
Oh, but don't get it.
No, you can't really see
much.
It's like far away and grainy.
Okay.
But you can hear people yelling in distress, which is distressing to hear. Mm-hmm. And so the people on shore, they're screaming. They're throwing rocks at the hippo, trying to get the hippo to let the child go. So the little boy had been playing on the shore as the adults washed their clothes in the river, and the hippo just snatches the kid off the shore and takes him out in the river. And so the video just shows the hippo like pulling the kid down, comes up at some point, you know, like shows its hippo jaws and then goes back
I did
down.
Not include any of this in my trauma experiences. Of people in Africa, but I feel like it really needs
you
to be included.
You should add hippo trauma.
Hippo trauma.
Maybe a new diagnosis.
Yeah, it's
hippo-related trauma disorder. It's a thing. It's a part of daily life.
We should submit it to the DSM and see what they say.
You know, the IRB may be difficult to get through, but no, it's part of daily life for people. And then they're in Colombia. They're like, we love our hippos. Don't kill them. You know, it's totally different.
They have more land space. Obviously, they're not living next door to the hippo, or else they would complain about being dragged into the water as well, I'm sure.
Yes, and their children being killed.
Yeah.
In the 1990s, Lake Naivasha, Kenya's hippo census was 1,250 hippos. Last year, the Kenya Wildlife Service estimated the number closer to 700, but they say though there is some poaching for meat and ivory canine teeth, the lower number may be more link to the difficulty in counting hippos, because they stay underwater for like 5 minutes at a time.
And then it's like, was that the hippo I just counted, exactly, or a different hippo?
Yeah, it looked like that one, but it also looked a little different. I can imagine, I'm not sure.
Tagging a hippo would be a challenge.
How do you tag a fucking hippo? Okay, I'm not going in.
You distract it. I'm going to run up behind and clip this thing on its ear.
Fuck no.
Because like, what did you say that was? How thick was the skin?
2 inches thick.
Yeah. So like to tranquilize a hippo and then it risks drowning, right? Because it's in the water. So how do you...
What is in that cocktail of hippo trank?
And if it's on land, it's obviously running at your face. So what are you going to... Yeah.
I'd be running.
Maybe helicopter.
Hopefully 27 miles per hour. But I know I don't win 27 miles per hour.
I'd be... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'd be afraid, actually, it would launch at me from land.
I know how fast helicopter. I run because I have my running app on my thing.
Oh, yeah. How fast do you run?
It's fucking slow. I run hella fucking slow.
You don't want to share that stat?
I run like 7 kilometers.
Kilometers?
Is it an hour or a minute? No, not a minute. An hour. An hour. Yeah, like that's slow. Like it takes me like 45 minutes to run 5K. I'm slow.
Slow too.
I'm like, you know, slow and steady wins the race.
Slow and steady makes me do this another time, maybe.
So there's been calls to call these hippos, like the cocaine hippos. But conservationists have taken the stance that humans should adapt their behavior to hippo behavior. And the local fishermen actually agree with the conservationists and say the solution is to learn to live with the hippos. For example, to fish from a boat rather than wading into the murky lake.
Well, that seems to make a lot of sense.
It seems to make a lot of sense.
But they've capsized boats, so, I mean, that doesn't make me feel better.
Right. I mean, it's maybe like damage control.
Get a bigger boat.
It's like harm reduction. It's not perfect.
No. No. Yeah. I mean, nothing between the Netflix show, The Zoo, and this, I don't think I'm going to do African safari anytime soon.
Oh, I'd be so anxious the entire time.
I would just be waiting for something to eat me.
The whole time.
There's going to be a cheetah, lions.
A hippo.
There's far too many YouTube videos out there for me to feel secure.
Crocodiles.
Actually, scary. Oh,
like a little fly that can give you like a disease.
Malaria. Like, thanks, tour guide. Okay, speaking of, I have a follow-up for you.
About hippos?
No.
Oh.
About little biting pests.
Oh, God. Are you going to bring up my whole...
I'm going to bring it up because...
Weevil incident?
Yeah.
Should I say what this is so people understand?
Yes.
So I've had many situations in the last 3 months where I've been bit by something while I'm sleeping in my bed.
And I've seen these wounds and like her arm is like swollen.
No, it's really bad. There's a whole pattern I've figured out where like the first day it doesn't itch, but then I have 2 sleepless nights because of
itching. So bad that you know the pattern.
It swells up to like 7-8 inches. Like I have another arm on my arm, and then like 4th day it's gone. And I thought it was spiders at first, and then I finally saw one of the fuckers the other night, and we looked it up on the interwebs, and it's a weevil.
Little weevil.
And they say weevils don't bite.
Why is your plant next to your bed still?
Well, I looked at, I did a weevil sweep. I didn't see any in there.
And yet you still are leaving the plant. Have you been bitten?
Well, since? I plucked that one weevil out, flushed it down the toilet, and I have not been bit in this last week since then. So.
You're being really brave. I just saw a spider in this room.
I am considering raising
itchy.
My bed off the ground because I think that's part of the issue.
I may have extra bed razors if you want them.
Well, we'll see. I'm not fully committed. I do like my bed on the floor because.
Really?
Yeah, because I can just roll right out. But no like, injury, no but, harm, no foul.
But like bugs.
Well, I know. It hasn't been an issue till now, till this last few months with this weevil attack. So
I'm
yeah.
just saying.
What's your follow-up to my weevil situation?
My follow-up is that we concluded that you suffocated the weevil and it bit you in a panic to stay alive. So just because it hasn't bitten you again doesn't mean you don't have weevils in your bed.
I've been trying to do Weevil searches.
Just means you rolled over it.
And sweeps every night before I go to bed.
But it's at night that they come out in the darkness.
And they eat me.
I think you
suffocate
them.
They walk on my face.
That's my thought. I just picture tons of Weevils and spiders on you all the time. Maybe that spider.
You're making me itchy.
Maybe that. Oh, no. Maybe that spider you just killed has been keeping that population of Weevils gone.
Yeah, see?
And now you've killed this ecosystem, and now the Weevils are going to come back in force.
Butterfly effect. Fuck.
That's the life cycle of...
FML. All right. That's all I got. Are you itchy?
Yeah, I'm just scratching my head.
All right.
Until next time, please work on increasing your cultural competencies and understanding that our Western perspective of illness and mental health is only one perspective, and it doesn't fully encompass other cultures at all or really well.
That's a really long yet important until next time.
Yeah.
Until next time.
I figured I'd leave the hippo one to you.
Stay clear of the hippo poop.